Welcome to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. We are proudly sponsored by my good friends at Dr. Dish. Contact Dr. Dish, mention this podcast, and receive an exclusive discount on their shooting machine. My hope is, as you listen to the podcast, you'll gain knowledge in X's and O's, leadership, and culture building. Now, let's grow the game together. When talking about coaches that have revolutionized the game, Vance Wahlberg's name is one of the first mentioned. His dribble drive offensive system changed how offenses attack the defense and made defenses reconsider how they guard. He is truly an ambassador for the game and loves sharing his knowledge with others. All right, I want to welcome Vance Wahlberg to the podcast. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Doing great, Matt.
We had some more dribble drive questions for you, so we'll just dive right into it.
No problem.
First of all, how has the offense evolved since it first became established? I know you used to call it the attack, attack, skip, attack, attack. And then did you coin the term dribble drive or did someone else do that?
No, I always called it ASA. Who's the best coach with the best marketing skills in the country? That's Coach Calipari. John was the one that, you know, dribble drive, and it kind of stuck that way. But it has definitely changed through the years. You know, just thinking back, it's been 22, 23, maybe 24 years of running the dribble drive now, even though a lot of people don't realize it started back in the late 90s, about 96, 97 is when I started running it. But there's been so many changes. I would say probably one of the biggest ones is when I first started, I asked the corners, the two and threes, to be patient, and we've really changed that. I don't want them to be patient anymore. There's times that they will be patient. So what we taught them is there's really three reads. If I'm in that two corner, and the two corner for me, just so people know, is the right side. The three is on the left side. The one up top and the five up top, I use my numbers. Those are my two attacks. And I love to have two point guards out there. Obviously, it'd be nice if they were both tall point guards, but it really doesn't matter. But it's really nice if one's a little bit taller. So my two point guards up top. So if my one penetrates what I call the two lane, we want to get down the lane. Two now has three reads. These are to me the only three ways they can guard two: is they hugging them, are they playing high side, or are they playing flat? Now if they're hugging them, we ask them to step all the way back to the sideline as close as you can. And obviously the reason we're doing that is open up that gap bigger for our one to drive, or our five if we go one to five, okay? Now, if they're playing high side, I'll guarantee you there's going to be some point of when they play high side that the defense is going to turn their head, lose vision on their man. And so all I'm thinking, if my man plays high side on me, is I'm thinking back cut, back cut, back cut. Come on, turn your head. Once you turn your head, I'm gone. So it might be on that first dribble where before I used to say be patient till they stopped in the drop zone. It might be on that first dribble where I'm still right, maybe at the three-point line dribbling, and a guy turns his head, we're back cutting. Okay? And then the third way, Matt, is if they're playing flat. What I mean by flat, high side is one above the other. Flat is where they're on the same lane, same line that you're on. So if they're playing flat, what we teach our corners is as soon as we start driving, we kick up. We fly out of that corner. And then when we fly out of the corner, one of the other things that we really change, I don't like to catch and go. I want to go and catch. And what I mean by that is, I don't like when they come out of the corner, they catch it, then they go. Because you watch how many times a person will travel, they're not ready to do what they should be doing. So when we come out of the corner, it's a continuous move. But when I catch it, I'm going when I catch it. And I just keep attacking. And if I do that attack, it gives me the advantage on the defense. Because once I stop, I think the advantage goes back to the defense. If I get on the go, I really think the advantage goes to right back to the offense. So those are a couple of big things that we talked about. When I worked with Coach Carl in Denver and in Sacramento, George was really big on not pump faking out on the perimeter, you know? And that kind of taught me what I really, what I teach my players. I don't want any pass thrown to the corner unless they have a three. It doesn't do us a bit of good to throw the corner because you don't have very good driving lanes from there. You really only have one. Now, if you elevate it up a little bit, it's a little bit different. But dead corner, we don't want to throw into them. And vice versa, as an offensive player, I always want to be moving to catch the ball unless they're hugging me, okay, or if I have the open three.
One question going back in your history a little bit. So why did you decide to implement this style of play, and what were you running before you went to dribble drive?
I ran, when I first started coaching in the late 70s, Carroll Williams was at Santa Clara. And back at that time, Carroll Williams was very known, very well known on the West Coast as a flex offense guru. So I ran, you know, I went to some of his camps. I ran some flex. I like running some different set plays. But honestly, Matt, what really changed this is I would go see a different coach every year. I started in 1987. In 1987, I went to see Bobby Knight. In 88, I spent a week and I saw Lou Olsen. In 89, I spent a week and I saw Dean Smith and Krzyzewski and Jimmy Valvano on that triangle there. So starting in 87, I spent a week, the first week of basketball practice, pay my own way, pay my own money. I want to learn from the best coaches in the country. And one of those years, I forget what year it was, in the early 90s, it's when Arkansas had the 40 minutes of hell with Nolan Richardson. I went and watched them for a week and I was really, really impressed with Nolan and what he did. And I always loved the press, but I wasn't really a gangbanger on the press. So when I came back, I said, you know what? We're going to really press. And I kind of changed some of the things the way we pressed because we didn't have the athletes a lot of the other schools did. So once I came back, our press, I went to learning how to press on makes, but I also went to pressing on misses. And when we went, anytime the pass went vertical, we went to the next trap. So what happened once I started that type of defense, we could not run our regular offense. So what was happening in our practice the first year doing this, say, okay, don't play our defense anymore, play normal man, and let's run our normal man offense. And it just so eventually, so basically, to be honest with you, the defense really created the offense.
Right. And we're definitely going to get to that later on. What are some misconceptions that coaches have about the offense?
If you don't believe in it, why run it? I'm really big on that. I just know the 9 years before, you know, when my last 5 years in high school, the 4 years in junior college, we had a stretch where we went 292-27. Okay. Or 29, something like that. It was ridiculous. We won a lot of games, and it wasn't like I had super, super players. I mean, my 28 years in high school, I've had 4 players go Division I. It's not like a ton of Division I players or any of that. But what I had was a lot of really good kids, kids who would work hard, kids who would do what you ask them to do. They would play their role. They did what you wanted to do. And we won a lot of games that way. I think some of the fallacies or some of the misnomers that people have, I think number one, everybody thinks the dribble drive is dribble, 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 and it's not. It is not dribble, dribble, dribble. We really work on teaching the attack dribble. What I mean by that is so many players on that first dribble, it's right next to them. They don't know how to get it out in front. So what happens is that dribble, when it's next to you, you lost every advantage you had by anything that you want to do. So we teach how to clip the hip, how to get low, how to clip the hip, how to get my shoulders facing the basket as soon as I can when I drive. We all know when we shoot, we want our shoulders facing the basket. And I teach my players the same thing. When we drive, I want your shoulders facing the basket as soon as possible. So there's a lot of coaches that think it's just, I'm going to dribble, try and beat my guy. It's not. If I can't beat my guy, I'm going to pass, cut hard, next person tries to beat him, and we go. So we keep waiting until we get a triple gap. And once we get that triple gap, we try and take advantage of that person. I think one of the other fallacies, I think, that you have within it, a lot of people, well, I run it, and I don't have good ball handling guards. I don't got guards that can really put it on the ground. Or I don't have guards that can really shoot it. And I tell them, it's, you know, people laugh at this, but let's be honest, if you don't have guards that can't shoot or guards that can't drive, you really got a pretty bad team. I mean, no matter what, it doesn't, you know, to me, it doesn't matter. But what I don't think people understand is, and when I talked to them and they said they don't have the success that they wanted to have, is they don't do the daily 45 drills. And if you don't do your daily 45 minutes, the first 45 minutes or whatever you want, those daily 45 drills, see, that 45-minute stretch is making your players a better player every day. There's a lot of coaches who teach their players how to run plays. And what happens by the end of the year, the other team knows how to scout and break, the, you know, beat those, not defend those plays. We're teaching them every day how to become a better player. We will play off of you. If you drive left, we're going to go this way. You drive right, this is going to happen. If you drop at the free throw, stop at the free throw line, this is going to happen. If you drive 1-2, this is going to happen. So we teach our players any action, this is the spacing movement out of it. And it's really not, you know, it sounds complicated, but it really isn't.
Not only am I honored to host this podcast, I'm also a high school basketball coach myself. And my team just purchased the Dr. Dish CT. Dr. Dish knows that coaches work very hard to save every penny they can. So I sent back our old other brand shooting machine and got a discount. We also took advantage of their one-year payment plan, paid half now and half later. And my kids love this shooting machine, calling and texting me constantly to get in the gym. And players love immediate feedback. They're able to know their shooting percentage from every single spot they shoot from. And also, using the Dr. Dish app, they can track their shots throughout the entire season or the course of their career. This is a game changer. It's almost like I hired another assistant coach, call Dr. Dish, mention this podcast, and take advantage of our exclusive discount. Now back to the podcast. Let's talk about that first 45 minutes of practice that you mentioned. And I know your blood series, and again, you have a lot of things that you do, but do you do the same 45 minutes every day, or do you have a series of drills that you rotate in and out? What does your first 45 minutes look like?
My first 45 minutes, we're going to do what we call Olympic shooting. That's three guys, two balls. We try and get one of our teams. Let's say we have 15 players on a team. So that's five buckets they're at. And I like my bigs doing the same thing. I want them learning how to handle the ball, shoot the three, and so forth. Now, there's some days I might have my inside bigs or my four. I might have the four coach take them during the day. But a lot of times we have them do the shooting with us. So they're going to do this little shooting drill, maybe for 4 minutes at the most, 3 to 4 minutes, just to get them loose. We like to see if we can get one group that can get 10 threes in a row. We're going right to threes. I don't go, you know, I'm not a big mid-range fan. So once we get done with that, now we'll go to our 4 minutes of our five spot shooting. Okay. And that five spot shooting is a 4 minute drill. The group of three should get 90 plus threes up in those 4 minutes, minimum of 90 if they really move up to 100. And they're trying to make 10 at all five spots on the court. We start on the right elbow, go to the right corner, left elbow, and then top of the key. All are three pointers. And then once you get 10 at every one, then you keep shooting. The best I've ever had in that drill, we had that day, I think it was a plus 34. That means that day they made 84 84 out of 92 threes.
Wow.
I had a group one day do that. Yeah, it was phenomenal. My high school, I think the best I had, that was at Pepperdine. My high school, I believe we had a plus 28. And that's that means you're 78 at about 92, 93, which is still darn good. But you're catching, you're moving, and you're rebounding your own shot. So we go from Olympic shooting to five spot shooting. Now we do drop layups for about 4 minutes. And what drop layups means is we're going to take a different part of the court each day. And this is where we mix it up. The drop layups, it might be 1 and 2 today. Tomorrow it might be from the 5 and the 2 spot. The next day it might be from the 1 and the 3 spot. The next day it might be the 5 and the 3. Now we do the 1 and the 4. So there's different spots on the court, and we'll do our different layups. Different, when I say layups, they're layups and threes. For example, if I'm in the 1-2, we're going to do a quick drop 2 backdoor. The next sequence, and we do it on both sides of the court. So I'll have 7 on one side, 7 on the other, or 8 and 8, depending on how many players you have. So we're moving fast. So there's two balls on each side. So if I come down, I do a quick drop two back door. Then I'm going to do a kick up. So it's a kick up rack to the hoop. Then I'm going to do a kick up to a toss back, rip and go. We go through everything. We might do a kick up, toss back, shoot the three. But we'll go through every scenario that we have for 4 minutes of doing that. Once we get done with that, then we go to our scramble drill. Our scramble drill is 3-on-2 continuous full court. And we go scramble where we don't score it. Then we go scramble score. So I'll have my golds against my Cardinals. And whichever team wins, the other team, I'm not a big guy that we're going to run at the end of practice. I expect my guys to go hard during practice. But I want them to learn how to compete. And we validate on every drill that we do. We like to validate what we do. What I mean by that, there's a winner, there's a loser. Okay. If my team wins, whoever hit that winning bucket goes to the free throw line, will shoot a free throw. If he makes the free throw, they get a win up on the scoreboard. We put it right where they keep the fouls. Your team, since they lost, will have an up and back in 10 seconds. As soon as I say go, I'm going to be ready to shoot the free throw. You're going to go up and back. Now, if I miss it, we don't get the win. They don't get the win, but we don't get the win. And we do, my whole team does a quick 5 push-ups, just as a reminder of how valuable free throws are. So we do that with scramble. We'll score scramble. Then we'll score scramble again with no dribbles. We'll do 3-on-2 full court. We'll play to 8. Then we'll do it again. We'll play to 8 with no dribbles. Now they got to really learn how to pass and cut. Now when we get done with that, we go to what I call a cardinal drill. The cardinal drill is a half court or three quarter court. We've gone from half and three quarter. It's two different ways of doing it. And that's a 2-on-1 continuous. We score that. And the way we score that, I've changed the scoring. I used to go to 8, but now we go 3 stops. Okay. So whatever team gets 3 stops first against the 2-on-1, they're the one that gets the win. Okay. Again, loser runs. Whoever gets that third stop, they shoot the free throw. That we go from there. We get done with that. We do one of our Texas drills. And a Texas drill could be a 1-1-1, 1-against-1 with a chaser. It could be a 1-21. It could be a 3-21. They're all different advantage to disadvantage drills, up, back. And what we try and do on that is we start teaching the press on that. So let's say it's a 1-2-1. Let's say we're doing a 1-21 Texas today. So you're the point up at the half court. My partner and myself are going to be at the free throw line. You're going to throw to one of us. We got a 2-on-1 against you, with a chaser coming from behind the baseline. So now it's a quick 2-on-1 with the chaser. We score or we miss. Let's say we score. Now we're going to put the press on you. And there's days that I might say, okay, on this press, I want a man on the ball and a man on the other offensive player. Or there might be a day, look, I want both the 9, forget pressuring the ball. We're going to put both on the offensive player. Then we play 2-on-2 coming back. Again, we score that. So that drill will change each day. Okay. And then we always end up with the blood drills. It could be blood 22, blood 33, blood 32, blood 44. Blood 22 is just a full court 2-on-2. Blood 30, the blood 30s, 32 or 33, it's just 3-on-3. The 32, they just know it starts on the 2 side. 33 means we're going to have the guy on the 3 side. So blood 33 is going to be the guard coming at the guard at half court, the 4-man and the 3-man. Blood 32 is going to be the guard coming from half court, the 4-man and the 2-man. Then we'll go blood 44. So I like out of 45 minutes to leave at least 20 minutes for the blood drills. So some days it might be blood 22 and we go blood 44. Some days it might be blood 32, 33, and 44. Because I know some days we can't get every one of them in. So that's basically, Matt, that's basically the daily 45. And you can just see from there how fast we move. We get winners and losers on every drill. We got competition. We keep them moving. Now they're learning how to play without us even saying anything.
So a major weakness a coach might have when he installs is if you're not fully committed and you just do a blood drill here, a blood drill, like you just pick a few minutes here or there, you're not really bought in. You're not going to see success.
You're not going to see success the way you want to see success.
Right.
Okay. And again, I'll just tell you this. I I probably got 300 plus emails through the years of coaches thanking me for their success because of the offense. Now, the ones that have really good success have the offense and the defense. They have both those put in because they really go hand in hand. But the ones who have been successful, the ones, couple areas where they've been successful. One, they've been the first ones to do it in their area, okay? Two, they're the ones that do the daily 45 all the time. And they come back and they say, you're right, your players get better and better through the course of the year. And that, I think, is a big key. And where you're going to see it, you know, there's a lot of coaches say, well, I don't have the type of guards this year. I'm going to go to a different offense this year. Well, there's different ways you still can run the dribble drive. Doesn't mean, like, again, everybody thinks you got to start it with a dribble. Everything's got to be dribble. It's not. It's pass cut. Cutting is just as important as driving in this offense.
What advice would you have for the youth coach that doesn't have near the practice time as the high school coach and may only see his kids a couple of times a week for 90 minutes?
Keep it to the bare minimum. Don't try to get too complicated. I still think I think you can do the daily 45 for 45 minutes of your 90 minutes. I think that's great teaching during that time. And obviously at the younger levels, that daily 45, you're not going to be able to get all those drills in. Okay. You may not have enough courts to do the Olympic shooting, but you can do your drop layups. You can teach the 3-on-2 scramble. You can teach the Cardinal 2-on-1 and then the blood drills. The blood drills are really one of the big keys in that they teach a lot of different things. But again, the teaching part is how much conviction do you have where a kid drives, pulls up, takes a 15 footer, and he might be, you know, might be a dad next there. And you tell the son that, look, we don't want that. Okay. I want you right now. That's something you're going to master down the line. I want you to master how to get to the rack and finish. I want you, instead of shooting that 15 footer, I want to make you a better player. Shoot that 19-9, learn how to knock down that open three. That's going to open your game a lot more.
Okay. Talking about finishing and getting to the rack, how would I teach my kids the best technique, the best method to get downhill?
Okay. Now there's a couple ways, and this is what I want people to understand. If I go 1-5, I can't do that action and have the 5 go right away because he'll be right in 1 when 1's cutting. So when 1 goes to 5 and cuts hard, it's going to give the 5 the triple gap. But if he's not good enough to beat them, okay, now what's going to happen? He stops at the free throw line. Now we start our drop game out of this. Now we look for the back door, the 4 flashes, we hit the floor, we give and go. Now the 4 might take him, or the 4 goes to a DHO. There's a lot of different layers of this, but it's something I think what a lot of people don't understand is if that player can't beat him, then pass cut, go the next one. The other thing is try and get it, like I said earlier, try and get the go and catch action. One of the things this year, I had a lefty point guard and another point guard who was a righty. So when we would say play off of each other, my lefty would come down and he would go freeze dribble right at the 5's man. We get that kickback. We're on the move. And sometimes we got some easy buckets that way. Or I do a kick up. I get that. Now I got a kickback. Now we're on the move again. So trying to teach those little tricks on how to do that. And then it comes down to the individual work. What I talked about earlier. Do I clip the hip? Do I get my shoulders facing the basket? Is my first dribble next to me? See, I get that ball right at the top of the key in that 5 spot. It should only take me 1 dribble to be able to finish. And the next thing is teaching them, when I get to certain parts of the court, what are the expectations? Okay, so if I can't beat my guy and I stop at the free throw line, that's the drop zone, that's the drop game. Now, let's say I get all the way to the rack zone, I get to the rack and I got my shot, I get it up. I get to the rack and it's like, uh-oh, here comes that big guy. Two things we expect him to do. One, if I can get that baby hook up over the big guy and my 4 man will clean it up. Or two, jump stop. And anytime we jump stop in the paint, I always expect a shot fake, a hitch. I stop, I hitch. A lot of big guys want to leave their feet. They leave their feet, lean into them. If not, it's a reverse pivot and we call it a drag 5. Now I'm going to throw it right back to the 5 man who's behind me. I get out, start the next action. So teaching them how to do those different things. When I get to the drag zone, I know I'm always, when I get to that inside between that drop zone and the rack zone, on that drag zone, that's the point, and that's what makes it a little bit tougher. Do I have the drive all the way? Do I have my four man up high, or did 4X step up and 3X step in? Do I have to skip to the three? So those are the reads that I have to be able to make. And that's where I have the blood drill.
Dive in a little more. When you say clip the hip, just talk about that for a second.
Okay, what clip the hip means is so many people drive, and right away they drive, and none of them wants to make contact. Okay, you're going to have a lot of soft players who, when they drive, they put the ball down, there's no contact, their shoulders are facing almost outside, off the court. So we talk about, when you get that ball, catch it, rip, get low, and I want to get my shoulder down to the hip where I want to be able to kind of bump them first. I always use kind of this analogy. If you're in a fight, and it's a 50-50 fight, I think the guy who has the best chance is probably the guy who hits the other guy first. Okay, so when I drive, I want to be able to bump you first before I drive and you bump me off my driving lane. So clipping that hip means I kind of bump you, I get low, fall out in front, and I'm ready to explode. So many people, their first dribble's up high next to them, they can't get low enough to be able to clip that other person's hip.
That's good detail. Okay, let's talk about the drop zone. If I remember correctly, when you were in Indiana, you mentioned that you would not teach to drop zone one of the first things. Why is that? Is that because players just go directly to the elbow, pick up their dribble?
So many people got hung up on the drop zone. And so I think when you first teach this, teach them how to get to the rack, how to get to the rack. If I can't get to the rack, pass cut. Okay, and that's why, and then because what happens, once you stop at the drop zone, now you got your two action, you got your four action, you got your three and five action, knowing what to do. There's a lot more teaching. You were talking about earlier, guys that don't have as much time, I would let that go to year two. You know, AAU teams, I would teach them how to get to the rack. See, the other thing I want out of that, Matt, is remember, when I start driving, I want my man in the corner. He's not standing anymore. He's only standing if what? If that man sucks in so much, he has the open three. And if you're playing anybody good, they're not going to give you a strong side three. Or he's such a great shooter, they're hugging the heck out of him. If they're flat, we're kicking up. If they're up high, we're back cutting. So we're getting all that action.
Okay, no, that's good, because I know that there's some, can be many misconceptions about that. So that youth coach, don't even attack the drop zone. Let's hit it year two. Let's work on getting downhill and finishing.
I would do that. I would definitely do that.
We'll be right back to the interview in just a few moments. But first, I want to thank you for listening to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. And if you like what you hear, we'd love to have you write us a review. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast or about United Basketball Clinics, you could follow us on Twitter at United_Clinics, or you could visit our website at unitedbasketballclinics.com.
What are some options to get your big involved? Like, you call your big your four, a lot of people call it their five, without them just being weak side waiting for the drop off or dump down. What are some ways, if you've got a dominant big, to get them involved in the offense?
One of the neat thing about coming back to high school, my 5 years in the NBA, obviously you're assistant, so you don't get to put in your plays. You know, I always try and sneak one or two and, hey, let's try this or whatever. But, you know, so coming back to high school, and this is one of the evolutions of the dribble drive, I really like having another point guard play at that four spot. And people are going to go, what? Wait. You're going to put, you know, how many? There's a lot of high schools that say, I don't really have a true big man. So what we did this last 2 years, perfect example of what you said about the football player. I had a really good athlete. Sophomore year, played varsity basketball for me, about 6'3", skinny, athletic, not super strong, was my backup point guard. Played about 4 or 5 minutes a game. Well, now, going into his junior year, the starting quarterback for our school ended up getting a full ride, being a starting quarterback at Nebraska. He got hurt. So now I lost Dante, who was my backup point guard, who was going to be my starting point guard the following year. I lost him all summer because football took him. I had to get him ready all fall. I didn't get him until December 12th. Okay. So now, what I figured is let's take some of the pressure off of him. So I actually put him at the four times. And so what we would do, if my one came down and did a step back dribble, that always tells the five to cut through. When the five basket cuts, now the four comes off of him to the free throw line, top of the key. We would go 1-4 and cut hard, or cut hard, come back. I have a really good shooter who'll go hard, come back, get that three behind if they go underneath. Okay. And then if we get nothing out of the give and go cut, off the comeback, off the action there, now he starts the offense right from there himself. He'll dribble one side or the other. We might back cut, we might go DHO, and we're right back into the offense. So that's one way if you got a four who you don't have as bigs. If I have a big, there's a lot of things we like to do. We'll go what we call, it's real complicated. We say four, that means it's going to our four man. Four, two pops up, we go 1-2, one cuts, five comes over, three comes up. Anytime we have a cutter going through, the four now steps up, becomes a screener on the block. We reverse it, we go to the one, inside to the four, try and get certain things that way. We'll have screening action for the four. We'll curl off the four, pop the four off, go to the four, let him do his things. If I call drop four, that means we're going to dribble 1-2. Two back doors, the four is going to come all the way to the elbow. Hit the four, flash cut. Now we let the four do his deal right there. If my four man can shoot the three, he doesn't come to the elbow. He goes to the three-point line. So there's a lot of different ways that you can get your four man the ball. When I had my best teams is when I had a four man that could really dominate and really could score the ball down there.
Okay, here's what a lot of people, I hear people say. You get a team. Maybe they're more athletic than you, and they switch everything. They switch everything at the top. They switch it on the wing. What are the best methods to combat the switch?
Good, very good question. This happens a lot. Here's what happens while they're switching, and this is some things you can do. We have little teaching points when we penetrate. If I penetrate strong side, that means if I penetrate 1-2, if I'm the one coming down and I penetrate that two lane, my goal is to get at least 1 foot in the paint. I did my job as a driver. I'm not a good driver if both feet of mine are knocked off. If I get both feet in the paint when I drive, I did a hell of a job up top. So teaching them is what happens. The reason they get to switch a lot is you're so close to that person. Okay, so if I drive and I get bumped off, and a two kicks up and there's only a 3-5 foot gap there, that's real easy to switch. Now, when you make it an 8-10 foot gap and they try and switch, we got our toss back, rip and go. There's a lot of different things you can do. Okay, now let's say I go 1-5. And here's the other thing I don't think people understand. If you want to stop switching, you got to cut to score and cut hard to score. We work on one of our drills, you know, when I talk about drop layups, remember I told you we might do 1-2 drop layups. We might do 1-3. We also do 1-5 drop layups. So we go 1-5 and we cut hard. We look for the 5 to hit the 1 over the top. So if they want to kind of look to see if they can switch or they can do something. But when you cut hard to the basket, that takes that defender out where they can't switch. So one, knowing the teaching points on how to drive. Two, knowing when I cut to score. Now, the next thing is take advantage if they want to switch. We had some teams that would like to switch on us. So I would take their worst defender, put that person where they would switch with my best offensive player, create that switch, go back to my best offensive player, cut them through. Now I give my best offensive player that whole top where he can drive and go by him against their worst defensive player or their player who's got 3 or 4 fouls on him. So there's ways you can take advantage of that. But the biggest keys are getting yourself where you're when you drive, get to your spots, and when you pass, make sure you cut the score.
Make it a chess match, and you can determine how the matchups are going to be. Because again, like you've said many times when I've heard you speak, is how many teams have two defensive players who can really guard a player getting downhill? Most people don't. If you've got two or three, then you're really blessed.
You're exactly right. And again, I a lot of coaches don't realize this, and this is one of the things I don't think they understand the most about the dribble drive. If I'm playing one against one, and that's all it is, and you're a better defender than me, you're probably going to end up locking me up more times than not. Now, how can I get that advantage to come my way? The way I can get it to be my way, there's three areas that we talk about. Okay, I try and stress with my teams. Okay, one, if I give you a triple gap to attack, it gives me a lot better chances to have a single or double gap. And obviously, I think you know what that means. If my gap is only that big, the drive, you know, that's like the 1-5. See, that's a single gap up top. I don't like to be in the 1-5 position unless we're running a play. But if all of a sudden I make the gap that much bigger, I double or triple that gap, now it's easier for me to attack. You watch when your turnovers come. Your players are attacking that single gap. Your players are throwing straight line passes in the paint, and your players are driving the three baseline, their weak hand baseline. I see more turnovers come there than anywhere else, and that's why we really work on that. So one of them is give the triple gap. Second point is you teach them how to go and catch. You've heard me say that enough today. Because what happens when I drive, and that guy steps in to stop my drive, and I make that pitch, and here's one of the other changes. See, I used to stop at the drop zone and make that pitch. Anytime we do a kick up, we never stop and make that. It's all in action. We're all moving. We're driving, moving, and then we're moving to that two corner if we're doing the one and the two. So that defender, that two defender, stops the one drive. But what happens is they're coming out 90% of the time to where the two caught it, not to where the two is going. So now the two has that triple gap on the move against the defender coming out. And then the third thing that I found out really helped us a lot. See, when we were brought up as a coach, we always talked about if you get that skip pass and you create that defense and that closeout, you got a big advantage. I totally agree. But I think even a bigger advantage is if I have the ball on the one side, if I have the ball up top in the one and I drive the 1-2 gap right there, even though it's a double gap, 2X knows he's the strong side defender. He knows how to defend that. That's not going to be a problem. But now I go 1-5 and I cut. Now the ball's on the opposite side of the court. Now I got the two over in that deep corner. So now what happens? What is 2X? He's not a strong side defender. He's a weak side defender. But all of a sudden, so he gets over to where he thinks he should be. He's always been taught. Now I start driving his way, and now you've got such a big advantage. That's where you get a lot of back doors or a lot of corner threes. So those are the three things that we really try to work on when we teach.
Well, the more I hear you speak, I'm realizing it's more of a patient offense than people realize. A lot of people think my point guard's got to get downhill, get to the rim quick. If, you know, it's a one pass, two pass offense. But no, you wait till that double, triple gap or that mismatch on the switch or that skip, and someone's in a poor closeout position, and then you make them pay.
Exactly right. And the other thing I think Matt, people think is it's always the one doing the attacking. Okay. See, I want to attack from the one spot. I want to attack from the five. I'm going to raise the two up. We're going to attack from the two spot, from the three spot. Now I even bring the four up to the free throw line, and we attack there. So I'm trying to teach the players how to attack from every aspect of that court.
Let's talk about dribble handoff. Is there a specific technique or what they're looking for or the read on that? Do you want them stopping at the handoff? How do you teach that?
Okay, I don't call it a DHO, a dribble handoff, because I think when you go dribble handoff, the first thing you're teaching them right away is not to attack the rack hard. Okay, so a kickback. Remember I told you our teaching point. So if I'm going to run a kickback, if I'm the one, my goal is to get to that nail. Okay, and that five who's coming behind me is going to be a good 8 to 10 feet behind me. He's going to be at that NBA three at least. Okay, so I want to be able to create that. That's how you don't get those switches. See, if I go just a DHO, that's why a lot of people think it's just a weave out top, because you're not trying to attack. Same thing with the kick up. If I drive, see, if it's a DHO, that's where they can switch it. And I don't, you know, If we'll run some DHOs now, only because when we go one, when we cut our five through and the four flashes, and I hit the four, see, the four is going to do some DHOs. Our big man's going to do some DHOs. So now when we get it, we stay in motion. Now we're looking for it's really just a moving pick and roll is all it is. That's what I want to do. Now, we might have a few set plays where we do a DHO, but I'm not a fan of DHOs in this because I think what it does, it teaches them not to go hard to the rack.
Coaches who want to implement, maybe you have this through your quick hitters or set plays, but what to implement a screen, a ball screen. I mean, do you implement any screens or is that only from a set play call?
It's a quickie. It's just, we call 14. It's a one and a four with the fist, 14 fists. But again, and I say this all the time to a lot of the coaches, see, the NBA, everybody sees a pick and roll in the NBA and how effective it is. But the whole way the NBA plays, that's what it's set up for. I mean, the old NBA days, if you put three guys in the corner, all three had to be within 6 feet of them and guard them. I mean, that's how bad it used to be, okay? The NBA three, you know, the key is a lot wider. The defensive 3 seconds. So an NBA guy can only be in that deep, in that key for 2.9 seconds, then they got to get out. And I think you know, and I know, most of the NBA guys, they're not going in, out, in, out, in, out. Shit, they're going to stay out most of the time, okay, because they don't want to get rolled on and get dunked on. And then I think the biggest thing, Matt, what happens is in the NBA, you watch Kevin Garnett set screens. You watch some of these guys set screens. I would easily say 8 out of 10 are illegal screens. Okay, they might call one on Garnett when he was playing maybe once a game. Okay, but Garnett knew all you had to do is stare the referee down and they weren't going to make that call again. And that's so in high school, how many times do you see that screen come up, that guard go a tad too soon, and you got the ball going the other way? But there are times, depending on the situation, where we will use a little pick and roll action. If we feel like maybe I'm a little stagnant or if I want to pick and pop, then start the dribble drive that way.
And what's so great about the dribble drive offense is every coach can put their own wrinkles to it. So if screening and some ball screen actions fit their personnel, they could do it and still keep the major components of dribble drive. Now let's talk about zone offense. A lot of questions arise about that in dribble drive.
Okay, here's some of the changes. Okay, well, let's just go with what is the same. We still want threes, and we still want layups. We're not going to settle for mid-range shots. Now, we're Coach Calipari. John always kind of jokes. You know, he goes, well, if you want to see Vance's zone, he's going to shoot a lot of threes. And he's right. Okay? I have no fear in shooting the three. We work a ton on shooting. And my kids, heck, you know, we drive to set up that open three. If they're going to zone it and we move it and all of a sudden we get an open three, we're going to shoot it. Okay? You know, and I use this story all the time. We, in junior college, we went 133-11 for 4 years. That's quite a few wins. We got zoned 5.5 games total out of the 144 games, just 5.5. And those 5 games, we made 17, 17, 19, 21, and 23 threes. And you know, and I know, you put down 17 threes on somebody, they're frustrated. The half of the game, Matt, we were 19 for 31 at halftime from the three. Okay. So again, but see, we teach how to get that open three. And the other thing I always tell coaches is how do you offensive rebound for your team? See, for us, we spend a ton of time. You know, a lot of times my four man is on the opposite side, right? So if that shot goes up by the two, and let's say you got the five up top, the three in the corner, and the four down low. And that shot goes up. Well, our principles are real simple. Whole man, whoever's opposite, always has to drive middle. He has to go middle for the rebound. I think the laziest screen out guy is always the opposite wing away. We bring that person in baseline side, underneath baseline side, and then we bring the five right through the gut. So we basically have three players rebounding the heck out of the ball on that weak side. And so my big thing is, look, if we can hit 3 out of 10 threes, I think we can rebound 3 at least out of the 7 misses if we go hard to the boards. So we really spend a lot of time on that.
What about a coach who has been running a five out offense? They don't have a big, they essentially five guards, a couple of forwards. They want to do five out with dribble drive.
Okay. Let me see if you can, if people can understand this, and I hope they can go understand what I'm trying to say. The advantage of a three out and the advantage of a four out offense, forget the five out right now. On the four out offense, the gaps are not as big, but once you beat somebody, what do you have? You got an open post. Okay. On a three out, you have bigger gaps to beat somebody, but once you beat them, now you're dealing with a double post. Okay, so what we went to many years ago is why not cheat and take the best of both? And here's what I mean by that, Matt. See, I never like my 1 and 5 being on the same plane unless we're running a play. So if my 1's coming down, my 5's trailing, if my 1 back dribbles, tells my 5 to cut through, 5 basket cuts hard, looks for the ball, whichever way 1 goes, he goes the opposite. Let's say 5X is staying at the free throw line to jam 1 up. So now 1 might come down, hit 5, 1 goes. So you're going to get your action that way. So what we try to do is always have a man in motion, always cutting, corners filled, and the big opposite, and somebody driving. So that kind of gave us a minimum of a double gap one way, a triple gap the other way. If I leave the 1 up, if I leave the 1 here and the 5 over here, if my 1 has a ball, that's a double gap this way. It's only a single gap this way. But if I cut them through, and whenever we cut hard, we always stop at the bucket to see what this guy's going to do. So if I go hard to the left, that's a triple gap. If I go hard to the right, that's a double gap. So I'm always giving them something that way. So it's something I think can really help people. So now on the 5 out, what happens is you have no post there, but you really have it tough to be able to find a good gap to drive. To cut, I think you might get a little bit more of a chance on that. So what there's a couple options you can do. I'd stay with the 4 out, 1 in. If you don't have a big guy, you can use the, like I said, put another guard down there, flash him. Now you can run things that way. Or we play a little bump game. If I went 1 to 2 and I cut, when 5 came over, 3 came up, when 1 cut through, 1 would bump 4, 4 would go out, 1 would play the post for that one option. And the next guy that cuts, whoever cuts, they would always bump the next guy out. So there's different ways you can handle that.
In that example, when the 1 cuts through and the 5 and the 3 feel over, do they feel immediately? Do they pause to see what the 2 is going to do? Talk about the timing of feeling.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Again, your team's going to know who they have and what they have. Let's say I have a 2-man that can both drive and shoot. If I have a 2-man that can both drive and shoot, when 1 hits 2, 1 cuts, 5's going to hold. 3's going to hold. Okay. We're going to give 2 a good 2 count, a 2-second count to be able to beat his man either way. 2 always has the option of going middle or going baseline. Obviously, if he goes middle, that means 5's going to kick back, 3's going to elevate, you're going to have 1 in the corner. Okay. Now, when 2 goes middle, 5 might back cut, 3 comes up. So you have all your different reads that way. You'll be able to do that. Now, if 2 gets it and goes baseline, again, what are you going to have off of the baseline drive? You're going to have 1 who cut through in the corner. You're going to have 4 tee up. You're going to have 3. We always teach on any baseline drive, we want to dive. So 3 would be the dive man, and 5 would have to come all the way over to be the drag man behind the penetration. So again, that's why I say in the blood drills, when you work on all these little breakdowns, this makes this flow so much easier.
No, that's good. Good detail. And then has your tee up changed over the years, or is it consistent to where it's always been with the 4 teeing up on the baseline drive?
He's teeing up, and the consistency is how good is he, how athletic is he, and what's his strength. If he's really tall and long, he's teeing right to that rim right there. Maybe he's not a quick jumper. He might tee up 4 feet past that, so he's got a little baby hook and so forth. So it all depends on how good your 4-man is.
Okay, here's a question that everybody's wondering. All right. I've been running flex. I've been running whatever offensive coach is listening to. What are some of the growing pains that come into play when you implement this offense? Because obviously it might be sloppy and messy and then people throw in the towel. What are some of the growing pains that coaches are going to have to live with in the beginning?
Patience is going to be number one. There's no doubt about it. I always say this story. When I went and helped Coach Calipari when Derrick Rose was a freshman, I went the first week there with Derrick and helped John out. And Derrick was so freaking fast. I mean, this is, you know, when he was in college, the 1 year he was there. I mean, he was a jet. But what Derrick didn't realize is, you know, going what we call the blowout zone from the backcourt all the way up to the breakdown zone, you want to blow it up as fast, get up there as fast as possible, whether it's a pass or the dribble. But you can't keep that same speed going to the hoop. You got to be able to make reads once you get there. So Derrick was so much out of control. Shit, it was charges. He was throwing the ball off the wall, off the backboard. He was just totally out. And I still remember John kind of joking with me and saying, well, Vance, at least I know I'm going to have Derrick for 2 years because he looks so crappy in this right now. Nobody's going to take him. What? That's the number one pick anyway. But just the patience on that. What happens a lot of times when you teach them get to the rack, they don't understand what a good shot is. Okay, again, for me, if I can get a shot up where it's not blocked, even though the big guy challenged me and I get it over the big guy, that's a good shot. If I get my shot up and it gets blocked, I don't like it. I have one of my coaches thinking, well, there's nothing wrong getting your shot blocked inside. I think I don't like it at all. It frustrates the hell out of me. I think if you think you're going to get your shot blocked, either get it high up, stop and hitch, okay? Or if you're really talented, you got the wraparound pass. So those are the things we try and teach. But just being patient when they drive, it's going to take time for them to understand, you know, what option do I have? And that's why, again, I go back to the blood drills. I think blood 33 is probably one of the best drills to teach them because what it does – most players work with, they're right-handed. So when they drive to their right, if 4X steps up, you can throw it high to the foreman. Okay? Now, once you start doing that, 4X steps up. Now, 3X has to step in. Now you start working on the skip. You work on that part of the offense. So you start teaching them. Most players, when they first start playing this game, their vision's like that. That's all they see. When they first start it, it's, I'm going to the rack. Now what starts happening? Now I'm going to rack. If 4X comes and picks me up, I'm going to find 4. Then what happens is, okay, 4X steps up and 3X steps in. Now I know I got my shot, I got 4, and I got 3. And that's just the teaching process. So I would say being patient would be a very, very, very big key for them.
Are there any specific passing drills that you believe are important, or does all the passing take place in that first 45 minutes? And also, are there specific techniques you teach for certain passes?
It happens in the blood drills, but when we do our 2-on-0 and our 3-on-0 drills, we're working on all those passes. You know, I think almost all of us, you know, I'm a lot older than most, you know, we always talk catch with 2, pass with 2, you know, all those different things, rebound with 2 hands. You know, when we do our work on our backdoor, I like the hard dribble, one hand backdoor pass. You know, I used to be a guy that, you know, jump stop, make your pass. Well, now, you know, I had a guard 1 year who was a lot smaller than other people. So he would drive, jump in the air, and make that skip pass to the 3. And I go, whoa. And then I had another guard who wasn't as tall as that one who used the step back dribble to create more space than jump in the air to make that pass. So my players, I kind of leave it up to them what they can do. We do a lot of, you know, I'm a little different. In California, I have all my basketball, my JV and varsity basketball players, I have them in first period PE. And I do that for a reason. We're not allowed to do any basketball during the school day, okay, in my PE class. So what we do is first period, I'll do my lifting 3 days a week, and we'll do some plyometrics the 4th day, and then the 5th day we have fun, okay? But we shoot from 6:30 to 7:45 every morning before school. That's not part of the school day. So my players come in every morning, you know, 4 days a week. There's one day we don't have PE, but they come in 4 days a week from 6:30 to 7:45. We shoot every morning. We'll do some ball handling drills. We'll do some passing drills. So we kind of mix it all up there so we can get a lot of different things in during that time.
Well, Coach, I think that's all the questions I have about the offense. But now I want to talk about the defense. Is there anything you want to add about the offense before we move on to the defense that maybe?
Again, I just hope people, you know, it's not an offense for everybody. It's an offense that you as a coach have to have a ton of confidence. I when we first started running it, I think people understand a little bit more now. People would look at me and say, he doesn't do anything on the sidelines. You know, these kids just go up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. That's not the way you're supposed to play the game. You're supposed to come down, make a call, get to your spots and do that. But my teaching comes in practice. I'll break it down and we do a ton of teaching in practice. We'll freeze it, we'll stop, we'll correct that there. See, during a game, if I have one of my players looking at me, what do we want to run, coach? I'm pulling them out. I want them going. On a dead ball, free throw, ATO, those are different. Those we'll get a quick hitter in. But during the course of the game, we want to get this going. And I just think that's something. If you're a coach who don't want to give the reins to your players, this is really not the offense for you.
Thanks for listening to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. Please take a moment to leave us a review and also leave a comment about what you enjoyed most about today's guest. I hope you'll join us on our next episode.